Hey now, what's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a good weekend. A tremendous Monday to you. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, lots to get to. Telephone number is toll free. Now, I've got two interviews coming up in the last hour or so. The middle of the program is the best time for you to get through, but if you want to get yourself in the seg, if you want to get on hold, if you want to get the rotation, I would encourage you to call right now. 1-800-636-8686. Toll free, 1-800-636-8686. There's no way you don't know that phone number by now. I've had that same phone number for years, like literally decades. There's no way you don't know it. You just have to take advantage of it. If you'd rather hit me up on social media, that always works. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. And yes, we do still take emails. Rome, R-O-M-E, at havetake.com. Lots of NFL to get to. I've got my thoughts and a recap of yesterday. And then coming up next segment, a senior NFL reporter for CBS Sports, Jonathan Jones. As I mentioned, As I mentioned, hour number two is wide open. Third hour, Jeff Perlman, the author of Three Ring Circus. When Jeff Perlman drops a book, we put him on. He is prolific. Also coming up in hour number three, Robert Lucetich, a golf analyst and a best-selling author. So all of that, and your telephone calls, and an ATP. Why don't we start with the bad news from yesterday? There was some good news, but I want to get the bad news out of the way first. Yesterday in the NFL was a brutal day for injuries. The 49ers alone lost five starting players, including Nick Bosa, to what is believed to be an ACL tear, which is a really bad, bad break for him and for them. No wonder the Niners are so bent about the turf at MetLife. If you lost a quarter of your starters in a single game, you would be pissed as well. And then what's to say about the Jets? That they got the hell beat out of them by the Niners JV team. Then again, that is fitting, given that the Jets look like a high school football team. I mean, seriously, that's not even gratuitous. That's factual. These bums couldn't get off the field defensively on a third and 31. When was the last time an offense on any level, much less the NFL, converted a third and 31? B-U-M-S, bums, bums, bums. And no, that doesn't make it all right for you to start with what you want to start doing. The Niners were not the only ones who were losing elite players, though. Saquon Barkley, Drew Locke, Cortland Sutton, Malik Hooker all went down, and the list goes on. There was a period of time in the first set of games yesterday when it seemed like we were averaging about an injury a minute. But it wasn't all horrible news from yesterday. There was a lot of awesome, starting with Aaron Rodgers once again. He has now completed more than two-thirds of his passes for more than 600 yards, six TDs, and no INTs. And the Packers have put up 40-plus in both of their games this year, including this TD to Aaron Jones.
Third and three, snap. Rodgers swings it left side. He's got a touchdown to Aaron Jones, the touchdown maker, who Lambeau leaps to the empty north end zone stands. And the Packers are on the board again, now trailing 14-9.
Thanks to Packers Radio. Like, when you watch Aaron Rodgers in the first two games this year, it's pretty obvious. Not only is this guy not done, he's not even close to being done. He's still elite as hell. But then, isn't that what I said after week one? Yeah, well, I'm saying it again after week two. And speaking of Aaron Jones, how about Aaron Jones? 236 yards from scrimmage and three TDs, including this on the first play of the second half.
Rodgers alone in the shotgun. Now Aaron Jones joins him in the offensive backfield. Give is to Jones up the middle. Breaking free. He's off to the races. Yes, it's going to be Secretary at the Belmont. No one will catch him to the end zone. Touchdown, Aaron Jones.
Wow, a Secretariat at the Belmont reference. Love that. Speaking of things I love, Kyler Murray kept on doing what I told you what he would do when I was on the NFL Today yesterday.
Murray is lined up in shotgun with 1 second left. They do run a play. They snap it to him. Murray keeping it, running to the right. He's to the five, cuts to the left, and hits pay dirt. Kyler Murray with a touchdown run from 14 yards out, and the Cardinals, with no time left in the first quarter, get another touchdown.
In for pay dirt, baby. That is a great play by Kyler Murray.
It's because the guy's freaky. I said it yesterday on the NFL Today on CBS. I said, for my money, the most electric player in the game is not Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes? It's not Lamar Jackson.
Mahomes?
It's Kyler Murray in terms of pure electricity and explosiveness. I'm not saying that he's in their quality or... I'm not saying he's the caliber of player of them just yet. I'm saying in terms of pure electricity, nobody can touch that guy. And then he went out and he did that. Meanwhile, the Chargers lose Tyrod Taylor right before the game. And then Justin Herbert comes in and plays like a stud. I could not be more impressed with his poise and execution after finding out right before kickoff that he was going to start. I mean, this kid is legit. So much so that the Lava Nation had already ripped the starting job from Taylor and given it to the kid pretty much after the opening drive. Never mind that Anthony Lynn's opinion is the only one that matters here, but Herbert did play really well. He just happened to leave a little too much time left on the clock in regulation for one Patrick Mahomes. And then Harrison.
Mahomes?
Harrison Butker put on a show in overtime.
It's Mariano Rivera. I'm saying this game's over. What do you think?
You can't bet against Butker.
He's pretty good.
He might be the best in the league. Here we go. Hold on. Before the snap, there was a timeout.
Flag.
And there's a flag on the field.
Is it a false start or offside? Offside, probably.
False start. Ooh. Number 73.
Oh,
offense.
How do you feel about a
58-yarder?
That's the number he's already hit.
This one's more uncomfortable.
All right, so from 53, he wins the game, except there was a flag. They push it back 5 yards. We know this guy's got a lot of leg, but can he hit it from 58?
For the win from 58.
Asking a lot of anybody else.
I know it. Here we go. Well, timeout first. It would have been good. Timeout first by Los Angeles.
Look at Butker. He's not happy, but you know what? This guy's that good.
All right, so is he that good? The guy makes it from 53. Doesn't matter. They push it back. He makes it from 58. It's good. But the Chargers tried to ice him. They call a timeout. So now this guy is going to have to do it again from 58. You got to think, right, that this guy's leg is tired. There's no way he can go 53, 58, and then 58 again to win the game, right?
58-yard attempt. He's had plenty of leg on the first two attempts. Butker's kick is up. He lines it up. The kick is long enough. It is good! Harrison Butker, money, 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 penalty. Try to freeze him. He thaws the Chargers with a 23-20 walk-off 58-yard field goal, tying a Chiefs record, his own record that he tied earlier in the game.
What? Chiefs radio. Man, that was macho. Macho as hell. Three straight pressure kicks from beyond 50. And the guy probably had five more kicks in him like that if you had asked him to do so. Just so we're clear, the best offense in the NFL also has the best kicker in the NFL. So even if you keep them out of the end zone, that cyborg is still rolling onto the field to crush footballs. But as great as that moment was, and that was amazing, it wasn't even the best kicking moment yesterday. The best kicking moment was in Dallas. The Cowboys were taking an ass-kicking. You see what I did there? They were taking an ass-kicking for most of the day, and then with 5 minutes left, they're down 39-24. They're down 15 late. They're looking at an 0-2 start, which would have been catastrophic for them. Not a good look for them, especially since they play in the sorriest division in football. Then Dak Prescott connects with Dalton Schultz on this TD.
Second and two, and they are inside the 10. Prescott back and looking and throwing it in the end zone. Cut! Schultz! Touchdown in the back of the end zone.
All right, now you're thinking, do you go for two or you kick for your one?
You know, here's why I would kick.
So Mike McCarthy ends up going for two, which was just one of the many weird calls yesterday. And save it, stat heads. I'm really not interested in your theories about going for two, down nine. Just make it a one-score game and keep moving. But the Cowboys went for two. They failed. Then their defense forced a punt. And Dak led Dallas on a nine-play, 76-yard drive in 68 seconds, capping it off with this.
Second and goal at the one. Prescott's going to keep it at right guard.
Got three
a
touchdowns.
Push sneak, touchdown, Prescott. A three-rushing touchdown game.
All right, so yesterday, Dak becomes the first player in NFL history with 400 passing yards and three rushing touchdowns in a single game. And yes, Jerry, his price just went up again. So that score made it 39-37. And you know how it goes from here. The team that's trailing tries the onside kick that they've got no chance of recovering, and that's the end of the game. Not this time.
Got to be careful of this little dribbler down the middle now.
Yeah. And the ball is recovered by Dallas. The ball spun around. Atlanta looked at it. It rolled across, and Dallas got it. How in the world, Dave?
Well, he didn't kick it far enough, so Atlanta backed away from the ball.
And when they backed away,
you got to go in and recover it. The ball is kicked towards Jaden Graham and Alamide Zaccheaus, and they back away from the ball. Somebody's yelling back away. Zaccheaus has got to dive on the football.
The Cowboys have a chance.
I mean, seriously, what the hell was that? No, I mean, seriously, what the hell was that? What the hell were the Falcons thinking? What were they doing? Well, I can answer that. Some of those dummies were thinking that the ball had to travel 10 yards before they could jump on it. Know the rules much? Hey, geniuses, the kicking team has to let it travel 10 before pouncing on it. You don't. In fact, it's your job not to let that happen. That's why you were the 11 on the field in that moment. Supposedly, you're the good hands crew, not the brain dead. Yet, there were at least four Falcons who could have grabbed that ball before it went 10 yards, and none of them did. They just sat there and they watched it, or they backed up. At least one of them backed up like, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. I'm not touching that spinning football. No, you got the wrong dude. If you think I'm going to touch that rock, oh, hell no. I mean, I saw that then. I just watched it again right now, and I still can't believe that happened. And of course that would come back to bite them because Dallas drove into field goal range and they, well, roll it.
46 for the win. No timeouts. Good snap. Good hold. 46 yards. Yes, sir. Kiss that pig. The final score, Dallas 40, Atlanta 39.
Kiss that pig. Make love to that pig. What an utterly ridiculous win for Dallas. And a truly more ridiculous loss for Atlanta. I mean, sure, that'll go down as a dub. But that game says a hell of a lot more about the Falcons than it does the Cowboys. And none of it is good. I guess what I'm saying is, hey, Atlanta, back to being the fail clowns.
Brad and Lafayette. Hey, Brad, what's up?
I want to talk about last night. You know, who's worse than the Giants? How about the fail clowns? Y'all don't understand who that. We don't understand rise up. Maybe it's more like wise up, ATL.
Man, Brad and Lafayette with some of the straightest fire ever.
Fail clowns.
All right, so if you want to talk ridiculous, you better be talking also about Russell Carrington Wilson. Because Carrington put on another clinic last night against the Pats. More than 300 yards from scrimmage and five TD passes. And some of those passes were a complete and total joke. Like this dime to DK Metcalf.
Now is going to bring Carson in closer to the line of scrimmage. Takes the snap. Wilson back to pass. Wilson looking. Has time. Going deep down the near sideline for Metcalf. Makes the catch inside the 10. Strolls to the end zone. Touchdown Seahawks. Russell Wilson dropped it in the bucket. Metcalf takes it in. A 54-yard touchdown strike.
If Russ had walked down the field and just handed the ball to Moore, he could not have put it in a better spot. And I know that fact that Russell Wilson has never received an MVP vote is speeding towards Jerome Bettis is from Detroit territory, but that fact is still a joke. And this is the year that ends. And it's not like the rest of that game was bad either. In fact, that was a damn good game last night. A damn good game which came down to a final play.
Cam takes the snap. He'll keep it. Running left side. Dives, and he's tripped up shy of the goal line. It's over. The Seahawks will hang on and win. Newton kept it on a quarterback sweep to the left, and he got tripped up. He went airborne, went down shy of the goal line, and the Seattle Seahawks survived.
That's a hell of a play by that Seattle defense. Cam Newton killed them in that spot all night long. They had not been able to stop him, and when they needed it most, they got that stop. And I don't care how much you hate the 12s and how much you think that they're a collection of tools. You might even be right. That game missed them last night. That would have been a hell of a scene and a hell of a sound to have them in the building on that final play. So there are some early thoughts and a quick recap of the NFL Sunday. When we come back, more of that with senior NFL reporter Jonathan Jones for CBS Sports. I've got more football. I've got basketball. I've got golf and a few more things. It's going to be a good day. It's always a good day here in the jungle. Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. Last week is in the books. Now it is time to review the tape and get ready for this week. I'm telling you, there is no better place to get in on all the action than DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes that are up for grabs. If you have not tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store right now because you do not want to miss this. Draft your lineup, feel the sweat like never before. Every single run, pass, and catch means more with DraftKings. It's simple. You just pick your lineup, you stay under the salary cap, and then you see how your team stacks up against the competition. DraftKings has paid out billions of dollars. Billions. To winners since 2012. They know a thing or two about cold, hard cash. So download the DraftKings app right now. Use the code ROME. For a limited time, new users can get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes. This week, codename ROME, only on DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. All right, as I mentioned, I've got two interviews coming up in hour number three. The second hour is wide open, but right now, as promised, we are joined by a senior NFL reporter and insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. Part of Tops on CBS Sports Network, previously worked for the Charlotte Observer and was a national NFL writer at Sports Illustrated. He is Jonathan Jones. Jonathan, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. I appreciate you having me back on.
Always good to have you. Thanks so much. Hate to start with the bad news, but when you look at all the injuries yesterday, what was going through your head? Is that all unfolded? Is it a coincidence or is it something else?
You know, it's interesting. I've talked with a lot of people since yesterday, former players, folks, equipment managers even, about field conditions and whatnot. And we have a lot of injuries every year, right? It's the occupational hazard of playing this game. But they usually don't happen to the stars, and they don't happen as often to these stars, right? Fantasy football stars and faces of franchises like Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey. And so what does it mean, and is it just coincidental? And I spoke with Kyle Long, my co-panelist on that other pregame show, as well as a former All-Pro offensive lineman for the Bears, and he said, listen, I do believe that not having a full off-season program, not having some preseason, does factor into that. And I wrote this for CBSSports.com that, you know, you got to get the body right. You have to prepare it for these 70 or so car crashes that these guys are essentially in every single week. And then what happens again 7 days later? They do it all over again. And so, you know, whether it's the Niners and Jets on the MetLife turf, which didn't give the Giants or Steelers any problems 6 days before, maybe they were wearing the wrong kind of cleats. Maybe the turf actually was sticky. Whether it's just, you know, going from one game and then finally, and you did okay in week one, right? But then you have to do it again, turn around and do it in week two, and maybe it's just catching up with a lot of these guys' bodies. But I think that we would be foolish to think that not having any preseason games and just hoping that these guys were ramping up appropriately in the weight room and, you know, 12 or so padded practices before week one, that I do think that that might have had something to do with it.
Jonathan Jones is joining us, no doubt. So you wrote about this for CBSSports.com, but can you walk me through it? What does that Saquon Barkley injury, which is believed to be an ACL, mean for his financial future?
Yeah, and since you've been on the radio, it has been confirmed that it is an ACL in his right knee, so he's going to be out for the season and surgery coming in the next little bit for him. And so, you know, after year three, that's the time that these running backs get paid. You saw it with Alvin Kamara. We obviously saw it with Ezekiel Elliott a little while ago. We saw it with Christian McCaffrey as well. And so Saquon, he dealt with that injury last season. He came back from it. He didn't look all that great the second half of the year, but he still got to 1,000 rushing yards. And really, that's what he needed to get to in year three in order to get paid next season. And I think that anyone who is expecting that from Saquon would also say, all right, well, that's going to be $15 million per year, sort of as the floor for Saquon Barkley. And now you have a guy who dealt with the injury last year. He's going to be coming off an ACL going into year four. The Giants are obviously, as a top three pick, are obviously going to pick up his fifth-year option. But can you tie up $60, $75 million in contract money to a guy who's been dealing with this kind of stuff coming off an ACL? You cannot. And so this, unfortunately, for Saquon means that his big payday more than likely is going to be delayed.
Jonathan Jones, my guest, jumping around now. Jonathan, what about the Falcons, right? You've got head coach Dan Quinn saying that the team does, in fact, know the rules when it comes to receiving an onside kick. Seems to me the fact that you have to say that your team knows the rule indicates a problem in the first place. I mean, did it look like to you that they actually know the rules?
It certainly didn't. And, you know, I've seen the other side of it where, you know, folks are trying to say, well, it looked like it was going to bound out of bounds. Well, I mean, the football is oblong. Like, it changes. You never know. That's the point of the onside kick. And as it's just sort of tumbling to you there and you feel comfortable just falling on it, you know, you should do that. And instead, what Atlanta did was they were clearing it out. They were sort of trying to box out, but instead the Cowboys had position there. They were ready for it. And frankly, if I were a Cowboys player right there, I wouldn't be able to believe my good fortune. I'll be honest, I turned that game off with about 4 minutes left. I checked Twitter later on as I was preparing for the 4:30 games, and I was like, no way are the Falcons doing this. So, you know, you might have been ready to write off the Cowboys and the NFC East, and certainly I think the team that's 0-2 that is most concerning is the Philadelphia Eagles, but the Cowboys sneaking away with that game is great for the Cowboys, but obviously very concerning for the prospects of Dan Quinn keeping his job in Atlanta long-term, at least right now.
No doubt. Jonathan Jones is joining us. All right, so what about Tom Brady? He did not look great in the season opener. We had talked about that. Yesterday, he completes 66% of his passes, 217 yards, a TD, and one INT. How did he look to you against the Panthers?
You know, I actually went back and watched that game this morning, and he looked pretty good. Listen, I thought that it was really overblown about, okay, he's 43 years old and his arm's cooked. I never saw that last year. I saw that he had bad wide receivers and that he was able to play a game that the defense played so well that he didn't have to make everything happen. And I wasn't surprised by his poor week one performance, really the Bucks' poor week one performance, because the most practice that they were getting leading up to this season with a new quarterback was at a private high school, right, in the bushes. So I wasn't surprised by that week one. Week two, I thought that he played really well. LeSean McCoy had two pretty major drops. I think that Leonard Fournette is very clearly the top running back for this team. And moving forward, I'm not going to be surprised to see him either as the established starter or as the de facto starter if Bruce Arians wants to stubbornly continue to put Ronald Jones there on the first snap of the game. But I liked what I saw from Brady. I didn't see some huge drop-off, but again, he was also, let's be fair about this, he was also playing the Panthers with 60% of their roster overhaul from last season, a number of rookies on that side of the ball, a couple of third downs that were continued thanks to penalties by rookie Derek Brown there on the, along the defensive line. So I liked what I saw from Brady, but again, not really ready to crown him right now. It was what it was.
We're talking to Jonathan Jones for a few more moments. So what do you make of the Chargers and Justin Herbert? Like, the team goes to him right before the start or right before the game and says, you got to go, Tyrod can't play. And then he plays lights out. I think for a rookie, Anthony Lynn said that Tyrod Taylor will be the starter when he comes back. What's your reaction when you hear that? And do you think that's the right call?
I think Anthony Lynn's going to wind up regretting that he said that. And, you know, we heard that sort of from Hugh Jackson a couple years ago, right? This isn't the first time that Tyrod has been in danger of being Wally Pipped, and it's probably going to happen to him this time. And Justin Herbert played so incredibly well, especially for the fact that, you know, there's 5-10 minutes before the game, and he said, all right, kids, you're up. And I would have to imagine that he didn't get a single first-team rep throughout the week, and maybe even for the last several weeks, so in practice. And so I liked what I saw from Herbert, the fact that he ultimately didn't get the W against a Patrick Mahomes-led Kansas City Chiefs team. That doesn't take away from his performance. For me, if I'm Anthony Lynn, I don't look at that and say, well, you know, if our defense would have held up there in overtime, maybe my ideas on Justin Herbert would change. He is clearly the future of the franchise. You are always scared to put out a rookie too early where it kills his confidence and he plays poorly. I absolutely did not see that from Justin Herbert against the Super Bowl champions. And I think moving forward, as long as this injury plagues Tyrod Taylor, I think we're going to see the Wally Pip again of Tyrod Taylor.
Jonathan Jones, my guest, and what a great game last night, right? What do you make of the ending of that Pat Seahawks game and Bill Belichick's decision not to call a timeout with 28 seconds left?
I don't have any issue with it whatsoever. You're talking to a graduate of UNC Chapel Hill. You're talking to a guy who was raised on Dean Smith, who has been watching and covering Roy Williams for some time. I know all about not calling a timeout at end of games, and I have screamed at televisions and in the Dean Dome for a long time. I say all that to preface that I understand the idea of Bill Belichick here to say, we have this Seahawks defense on their heels. We have a swaggy quarterback in Cam Newton. Whether or not you believe in momentum, whether or not analytics wants to say that momentum exists or not, the 11 players for the New England Patriots believe that they had the momentum right there. And so what do? You call a timeout and you try to get two or three hurried passes into the end zone with no timeouts, which means that you can't really do anything with Cam Newton on the ground from 10 or 12 yards out. Or do you trust in your offense, as Bill Belichick did, and hope that in that half minute that you can get down and score? And what do you know? With just a couple of seconds left, they have one play from the one in Seattle against a Super Bowl contender to win the game, and you have who is probably the greatest short yardage quarterback in NFL history in Cam Newton, who right now at 31 years old is playing lights out. We'll see if that continues as the season goes along. That's the play to win the game. And unfortunately for the Patriots and Belichick and Cam, they just didn't get into the end zone. Seattle's defense made a better play, but that was the play. And if I were Bill Belichick today, if I were the GOAT, I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't be losing any sleep over not getting into the end zone right there.
I've got no problem with it or the play call. I thought they handled it right. You got to tip your hat to Seattle for making a great play. All right, so one last thought. The Jets, Jonathan, are 0-2. They have been humiliated badly in both games. How ugly is their situation?
It's really ugly. I've always wondered if Adam Gase was going to be the right guy for the job. So far, I think it's been proven that he is not. Joe Douglas, so far for me, gets high marks as the GM there. But Adam Gase is really struggling as a head coach. Obviously, they've had some injuries. I don't want to put all of this on Sam Darnold because he did and has made some plays already this season. He made an incredible throw yesterday that was among the best of any quarterback in week two. Listen, if the Jets are going to be in a position to have the number one overall selection and you're having to decide whether you're going to give Sam Darnold a long-term contract at the end of this season, in next offseason, or you can draft Trevor Lawrence with the number one overall pick, I think that you have to draft Trevor Lawrence. And because the Arizona Cardinals, by virtue of trading away number 10 overall pick Josh Rosen and drafting Kyler Murray, have already set this precedent, that it makes it more okay. And I understand, how many times are we going to start over if you're the Jets, or more especially if you are a Jets fan? But I do believe that Trevor Lawrence is a guy that you can't pass up. We're talking about an Andrew Luck tier type of player. And so because of that, I don't see how if you have the number one overall pick, you trade that away and try to collect things and then pay Sam Darnold and hope that you can work this out with him. I think that because that milk has already been spilled and everybody understands that the cleanup isn't that bad with what the Cardinals have done with Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen, that if you were the Jets, you'd say, all right, you know, that was the previous regime. We fought it out with him. But this is a guy who can absolutely change the direction of this franchise, and we got to do it.
All right, so a quick follow. When you look at Darnold, and it certainly is not all his fault. I mean, there's been a lot of change. He does not have a lot of help around him. Now, he's not without blame. But when you look at him, does he look to you like a franchise quarterback or a top 10 quarterback? Or does he look like a guy who's just going to start in the NFL?
That he absolutely, and has always, to me, looked like the latter. And, you know, it's just the way it is with him. I didn't see a guy who really valued the football in college. I haven't seen that many wow plays. It's tough because, you know, we look at a Joe Burrow, and obviously his last season with LSU was incredible. But even through two games, even throwing 60 passes until his arm falls off on Thursday Night Football, he makes those plays where you're like, okay. Like, in week two, he looked like what Baker Mayfield should look like every single week. And right now, Sam Darnold is very – and look at what Josh Allen has done and how far he's come along. Right now, if you want to have the way-too-early MVP conversation, he's right there in the top six or seven in how he engineered that comeback – or, excuse me, how he engineered that second-half play against the Dolphins for the Bills. And so – I look at a Sam Darnold, I'm like, why can't you do this? And maybe it's not this year, especially with no help around him. I do understand that. But I am not seeing that franchise quarterback, no doubt about it, that I think the Jets really wanted out of him.
He is a senior NFL reporter and an insider for CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ, also part of Tops on CBS Sports Network. Jonathan Jones helping us break down week two. Jonathan, appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Appreciate you.
That was good. Really good. When we come back, and if you want to react to any of that, you can. Also, Ian Rappaport on Twitter, quote, source, Panthers running back Christian McCaffrey is out 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. This is following his MRI. Brutal news, quote, end of quote. There is your fantasy update, Alvin. Christian McCaffrey out 4 to 6. Do you ever remember a week where so many elite stars went down? All right, when we come back, we are wide open until the top of hour number three. Oh, and by the way, the Lakers and Nuggets had an amazing game last night. You may not even know they played. I've got a recap on that, too. And lots of golf to get to, plus Jeff Perlman in the third hour, Robert Lucetich in hour number three, and here is your bottom of the hour.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
You already know what I'm about to say, right? Because I say this every single Monday at this time. Monday is an ATP day, Ask the Pros. And it's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You just want to go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Ask me a question there, and I will answer one of them later on. And remember, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service. At O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I think it's kind of a given. NFL players know what they sign up for. That said, to see the injuries that there were over the past weekend, Saquon Barkley, torn ACL. And that is such a terrible break for him, for them. Christian McCaffrey, high ankle sprain, out 4 to 6. Nick Bosa with a significant injury. I mean, needless to say, obviously the offseason, as crazy as it was, I mean, I'm no doctor, but I don't think I need to be to know that this is not a quinky dink. If you don't have your normal type of offseason and the players themselves, I mean, you trust them to go off and get their work in, and I'm sure they did. But if you don't have your normal processes in place, it can't be that surprising that there is that much of a rash of injuries that early in the year. And as Jonathan Jones points out, not just injuries, but injuries to star players. Is there anything you saw from that NFL weekend that you want to talk about? 1-800-636-8686. Now is the time to call because we have no interviews until the top of hour number three. Now, when there are NFL games going on, essentially nothing else matters. It blots out the sun. It doesn't matter what else is happening. Most people will not notice if there was an NFL game on. And that's exactly what happened yesterday, which is why I'm guessing that for some of you, this might be the first time you hear or see what happened with the LA Lakers last night. Again, we're not talking about some niche sport here. We're talking about the association. We're talking about the NBA. Not just the NBA, but the Los Angeles Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. But because the NFL was on, this is probably the first time that you're going to see and hear this filth from one Alex Caruso.
Jokic dribbling. Howard knocks it out of the air. Rondo's got it. Ahead to Caruso. Caruso one-on-one. He dunked it right on top of Jeremy Grant, and the Laker bench is going nuts.
Throw it down, bald man. And now you know that's going to end up in the bald Mamba montage that I always play on this program. You know that's going in there. I'm not sure what's better, the dunk or how the Laker bench reacted. They lost their collective minds. I get it. I pretty much lost mine, and I was 3,000 miles away. And the fourth quarter of last night's game was tremendous. Stop me if you've heard this before. The Nuggets trailed by 16 at one point. They come all the way back. Then in the final few minutes, it was the Joker versus the Brow. Jamal Murray made a couple of free throws with 5:21 left in that game. That was the last time somebody other than the Joker or the Brow scored. Joker had 12 straight, including this bucket with 20 seconds left that put Denver up by one.
The Nuggets, difference between game and shot clock, 2.7 seconds. Inbound to Nikola Jokic, guarded by Anthony Davis. Gets into the dotted line, leans in, hook shot, got it! Denver's back in the lead, a little too early.
Denver is incredible. I mean, I can't say enough about Denver. They love getting down big and then coming back from the dead. They've done it over and over again. It's how they knocked out the Jazz. It's how they buried the Clippers. Their opponents know the comeback is coming. They know they're going to make a run, yet they're seemingly powerless to stop it. And doing it last night against the Lakers in the conference finals was so brass. You win that game, and then all of a sudden it's a 1-1 series, and anything is possible. But the Lakers did have one more chance. They get the ball to Caruso. He misses a three. Then they have one more chance. Danny Green takes a shot. Jamal Murray with a big block blocks it out of bounds. Then the Lakers were going to have one more shot. 2.1 seconds left. Rajon Rondo inbounding under LA's basket. Alvi, roll it. Roll the hell out of it.
Rondo brings in Anthony Davis. Three for the win. He got it! No time on the clock. It's over. Anthony Davis hits a three. The Lakers win it.
I mean, unreal. That was unreal. Run that back one more time.
Rondo brings in Anthony Davis. Three for the win. He got it! No time on the clock. It's over. Anthony Davis hits a three. The Lakers win it.
Incredible, and even more so when you listen to Rondo run through his options. But before we get to that, how about Rondo jumping off the bench and asking Vogel if he wanted a new inbounder in the game? Vogel's response, quote, obviously I said, heck yes, end quote. I mean, Rondo is incredible. Not just that he was looking to inbound that ball, but his breakdown on the inbound play.
I think I made every eye contact with every player on my team that play. My first look was Kenny backdoor. That wasn't there. Danny backdoor wasn't there. Brian and I looked out at it, but he didn't move, and then I saw Eddie coming on the outside and try to get it to him on time on target. I had Joker on me, so obviously I couldn't throw a lob pass, and you know, he did the rest.
He certainly did do the rest, and now you know why Rondo is such a genius. Hey, look, I'm not exactly sure what Denver's Mason Plumlee was doing on that play. He and Denver picked a bad time for a bad moment. Little miscommunication, Davis gets open, drains a three, and then Plumlee gets dragged on Twitter for hours. Just a gut-wrenching loss for Denver. They worked all the way back. They were 2.1 seconds away from winning that game, tying that series, having a chance to apply some real pressure to the Lakers. They were that close. Again, they showed that much heart. And then comes that guy with that shot. And as credible as that shot was, you take that game to Staples, where game two would have been played. Can you imagine what that would have been like for Davis to hit a game-winning three in the conference finals at Staples? Can you imagine them doing that in Staples wearing the black Mamba jerseys? It sure seems like the Laker players and the coaches can, because they were talking about Kobe quite a bit after the game. In fact, AD shouted, "Kobe," right after that shot went down, and then added more later on about the jerseys.
We just feel like we play a little different. Our swagger is a little different. You know, every time we put on those jerseys, obviously, you know, we're representing him. But, you know, especially in those jerseys, you know, it's his jersey, the ones he created. So anytime we put it on, we feel like we want to win. You know, coach made sure that, you know, we knew that, you know, in that huddle. I said, I mean, look at the jerseys you have on. You know, he would make big time plays, so it's time for us to make big time plays. I think it's like 6 minutes left in the game, and you know, guys were able to do that. So just looking down at the jersey and coach telling us, it's just a constant reminder that you know, Kobe's with us, and we kind of have his spirit in those jerseys.
Strong, strong comments, and the coach went a step further.
That's a shot Kobe Bryant would hit. You know, so to me, you know, AD coming off, you know, that, you know, just flying through the wing like that for the catch and shoot with the game on the line in the biggest moment of our season, nothing but net. Mamba shot.
That was a Mamba shot. In fact, that was a Mamba moment. A hell of a Mamba moment. Now, what a tough, tough loss for Denver. They had fought all the way back again. 2 seconds away from winning that game, and that series looks completely different in one game apiece. But AD stepping up, getting it done. All right, looking ahead to hour number two, I want to flip back to the NFL, and I want to talk about a couple of alleged geniuses. Alleged geniuses. Matt Patricia and Adam Gase. How many times have we heard that these two dudes are geniuses? And would anybody be surprised if they were the first two to lose their jobs? I'm not looking to get anybody fired. That's not what I'm here to do. But those two guys are going to get fired sooner than later. Even though, and look, it's not a terrible thing to say. They're all hired to get fired, essentially. But especially those two. And the reason why I'm swerving way out of my lane to make that point is because who else do we hear called a genius more than those two? I'll hit on that. I'll give you a genius. BDC. How about this guy? I'll give you another genius. The guy with the biggest head ever, James Kelly. Man, he cleaned up this weekend. Did you get down with his picks? All of that coming up. Don't go anywhere.